Hello, everyone, and welcome. My name is Lynn Anderson, and I'll be moderating today's CIDR session. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone that all of the CIDR sessions, including this one, are recorded and available from the CIDR site. I'll post that URL in the text box so that you can access that yourself or pass it on to a colleague who wasn't able to make it today. There we go. The PowerPoint presentation will also be available from the CIDR site and an MP3 recording of this session if that's of interest to you. I'll quickly go over some of the features of this platform for those of you who are new to it. Let's go. Oops, sorry. Within the bottom left corner of the screen, you can see we have the audio window with the microphone icon, and you can click on that to chat or to talk at any time, sorry. You can adjust your microphone and speaker levels using the sliders to the right of the microphone icon. Above that, we have the chat window. You can text anyone in the room privately by using the drop-down menu and choosing a specific name, or you can text everyone in the room by just leaving it at this room. Now, above that, we have our participant window, which will show you all the participants in the room, and you can also use the emoticons. There's a happy face and clapping and that throughout the session in response to any comments. And there's a hands up icon. So if you want to interrupt with a question or comment, or I shouldn't say interrupt, but if you have a question or comment that you'd like to make using the audio but somebody else is talking, you can click on the little hands up icon. It's the little hand with the green arrow, and that just lets us know that you're waiting to use the microphone. In the very top menu, we also have a notepad there. You can use the notepad to take notes during the session and then download those in Word. And we have, there's also a little, I'm going to point to it here, a little layout drop-down menu here. So if you don't like the layout of this platform as it is right now, you have some selection and choice, and you can alter it for your screen throughout the session. Also, throughout this session, as I mentioned, you will have chances to share questions or comments, and I believe Olaf will be stopping periodically for that. Finally, when you do leave the session, at the end, there will be a survey that will pop open, and we would really appreciate it if you could complete that survey. It's a very few questions, but it helps us to plan future CIDR sessions, and it also gives some heads up to illuminate about what you find great about the platform and issues that you may have had with the platform. So please take a moment to fill out that survey when you leave. Now, it's always fun to see where everyone's coming from when we're in here, and we're going to display that on the map here. If you click on the, there's a little wand to the left of Alaska, click on that and then click on the map to show where you're coming from. It'll leave a little mine on the map and we can see where all our participants are from today. I'm thinking that's Moira over there, and we have a few people over in the Philippines there, it looks like. Wonderful, a widespread group today. Now, I'm very pleased to introduce our presenter for today's session, Dr. Olaf Zawacki-Richter. Olaf received his PhD from the School of Education at Oldenburg University. His dissertation addressed the topic of student and faculty support in online distance education. And his supervisor for that was Professor Otto Peters, who was the founding rector of Germany's Open University, the Fern University in Hagen. Dr. Zawacki-Richter has published papers and articles in the field of distance education, continuing education, educational management, and human resource development. He's presented and served as invited chair and reviewer at many international conferences. Olaf is a faculty member in the MBA in Educational Management program offered by the Faculty of Education and Social Sciences at Oldenburg University. He is also an adjunct associate professor in the online Master of Distance Education program that is jointly offered by the University of Maryland, University College, and Oldenburg University. Between 2003 and 2007, Olaf worked as project manager at the Frankfurt School of Finance and Management in Frankfurt, and this is a private distance teaching institution. Early in 2007, he returned to the University of Oldenburg and joined the Division of Continuing Education and Educational Management. In September of 2008, Dr. Zwicky Richter started a fixed-term professorship in educational technology at the Fern University in Hagen. And today he joins us from Hagen to discuss a series of three studies exploring the field of distance education research. So now I'll hand over the mic to you, Olaf, so that you can get started.
Yeah, thank you very much, Lynn, and thank you for your kind invitation and your kind introduction. It's a pleasure to present in this forum. So what is it about? Peer-reviewed scholarly journals are important carriers of knowledge within a discipline. So in my presentation, I will explore the research field of distance education by means of a bibliometric analysis. But before I start, I would like to briefly introduce my university so that you see where I come from, the Fern University in Hagen. So this is the main campus of the Fern University in Hagen in Germany. And my office where I'm sitting is right here. And Hagen is located in the western part of Germany, in the center of the country, in Europe. Just a quick overview of the main facts and figures of our university. We only have one single dedicated and state-funded distance teaching university in Germany. It was founded in 1974. And it's now the biggest university in Germany in terms of enrollments. We have about 70,000 students, and 80% of them are part-time students, working students, and their average age is between 29 and 35 years, and 44% of them are women. We have four faculties at our university, the Faculty of Business Administration and Economics, with about a bit more than one-third of our students, and the Faculty of Humanities and Social Sciences with another third of students, and then the Faculty of Law and the Faculty of Mathematics and Computer Science. Okay, let's get started with an overview. In the first step, I will develop a classification system of research areas in the field of distance education derived from a Delphi study. And based on this classification, I carried out a large-scale literature review in order to identify gaps and priority areas, as well as to explore methods, gender, and collaboration patterns in distance education research. And furthermore, open access publications play a more and more important role in the dissemination of research results. So finally, I will look at a new study at the growing impact of open access publications in contrast to traditional subscription-based journals in our field. And of course, finally, I will also discuss implications for further research. In my presentation, I hope to give some answers to the following questions. So firstly, what are the research areas in distance education, and how can we categorize the body of knowledge in distance education? And based on that, where are gaps and priority areas? Is there a trend maybe towards more qualitative research, and what about collaboration among researchers in distance education? And then with regard to the journals, do distance education journals maybe prefer to publish qualitative or quantitative studies? And who are the leading contributors in our field? And from which countries do they come from? Furthermore, do male and female researchers maybe tend to choose different research topics, and the methodological approach affect the rate of collaboration among researchers? And finally, the question, do open access journals maybe even have a greater impact in terms of citations and the perceived value than closed access journals? So I will summarize the main results of a series of four studies, which is quite an ambitious attempt in just 30 to 40 minutes. The first one is this Delphi study, where we developed this classification system of research areas in distance education. That one was published in iRodl in last summer, followed by this review article published in December. And then another third article was just published in Open Learning together with my colleague here from the Fern University, Christina von Primmer, about gender and collaboration patterns in distance education. And the fourth study with the impact analysis of open access journals will be published in the next issue of the Journal of Distance Education. Just to make sure that, yeah, we are together. I see distance education as the all-inclusive umbrella term for media-based learning and teaching in face-to-face as well as distance education settings. And the combination of both is referred to as blended learning or flexible learning. Now, the first thing we need to explore a research discipline is a validated structure or classification of research areas in the field. So in order to develop a classification system of research areas in distance education, I carried out an international Delphi study. 25 individuals were on the expert panel, and they came from 11 different countries, reporting an average of 27 years of professional experience in distance education. So they can really be considered as experts. And in the first round, it was a two-round Delphi study, in the first round, I asked the experts to list 10 research areas that they consider important. And based on this, based on the qualitative text analysis of the responses, I developed this classification system. And in the second round, the experts were asked to rate these research areas on a scale of important. And of course, and they were also asked what are the most neglected research areas in our field. The three major lines of research or broad meta levels of distance education research were derived from the experts' responses in the Delphi study. There's a macro level, global system level, that I call distance education systems and theories. Then we have a meso level, which is the institutional level of educational management, organization, and technology. And of course, we have a micro level, which is concerned with teaching and learning in distance education. This is the level of the individual learner. And within these three levels, the research issues that are considered important by the experts were categorized into the following 15 research areas, just to give you a quick overview. So on the micro level, we have issues such as access, equity, and ethics, or globalization of education and cross-cultural aspects, distance teaching systems and institutions. And then on the meso level, all issues that refer to all kinds of aspects of educational management. So for example, infrastructures, managing infrastructures for educational technology, innovation and change management, professional development, learner support services, or quality insurance are important topics here. And of course, on the micro level, teaching and learning in distance education, all issues that refer to the instructional design process, interaction and communication and learning communities, and learner characteristics. And finally, the experts were asked, what are the most neglected research areas, which is very interesting. And they claimed that the following areas should receive much more attention. On the macro level, cross-cultural aspects of transnational distance education. On the meso level, innovation and change management, and especially the costing and funding of distance education. And on the micro level, the added value of Web 2.0 applications in the instructional design process. So what are the opportunities that Web 2.0 application might afford for teaching and learning? So that was the opinion of the experts. And in order to test this opinion empirically, we carried out a review of all research articles that were published in 5 prominent distance education journals, 695 papers in the time period between 2000 and 2008. And the journals were Open Learning from the UK, the Australian Journal of Distance Education, the American Journal of Distance Education, and then 2 Canadian journals, the Journal of Distance Education and the International Review of Research in Open and Distance Learning. The research areas and the research methods were coded by a team of 3 researchers. And Cohen-Kupper is a measure for the consistency of coding decisions among raters. And the Kupper for the coding of research areas equals 0.675 and can be therefore considered as good. And the Kupper for the coding of research methods equals 0.855, which is excellent. The main source of coding discrepancies is a considerable overlap between some research areas. Some research areas are investigated on different levels. So for example, cross-cultural aspects have to be considered in international cooperations on the global education market, which is the macro level, and of course in the planning and implementation and management of transnational programs between institutions. So this is the meso level. And finally, intercultural communication plays, of course, an important role in classes with mixed cohorts of students from all over the world, which is the micro level. So that makes the coding a bit complicated. As you can see, you see basically nothing on this chart. There are no significant positive or negative trends of research issues that can be reported for the time period between 2000 and 2008. So sometimes there's a special issue on a specific topic, and then the graph goes up, but then it goes down again. But looking at the frequencies of research articles on each topic reveals a strong imbalance of research areas covered in the publications. The micro perspective, teaching and learning in distance education, is highly overrepresented. And as you can see here in this nicely edited chart, But I think this is not very surprising, since I would guess that the field of distance education is, of course, dominated by educators who are more concerned with research into individual learning processes. I just show another slide, and then we can stop for some questions, maybe. This table shows a ranking of research areas by number of articles. And here on the right-hand side, in the column with the cumulative percentages, you see that over 50% of articles deal with topics on the micro level, whereas issues that were considered as neglected research areas are, in fact, at the bottom of the list. So globalization of education and cross-cultural aspects, innovation and change, costs and benefits. So this supports the experts' opinion in the Delphi study. But I stop for a while now, and you can ask some questions if you have some.
Olaf, Lucia had asked that you might explain, I believe it was slide 8, in a little more detail. So okay, we're at slide 17 right now. I don't want to lose our spot. Lucia, please tell me if I'm at the right slide that you wanted explained. Lucia, can you just text if this was the slide that you wanted? Okay, Lucia, if you have a specific question, that might be helpful. In the meantime, I think there's been a couple other comments posted, Olaf.
Yes, I also think it's not very surprising that studies on costs are at the bottom of the list. I think this has something to do with that institutions are not willing to share their data. So it's very hard to get data for these kinds of study. I have a colleague in Oldenburg, Thomas Hülsmann, and he wrote a book about the costing of distance education. And he did a study about the costing of our Master of Distance Education program. But there are very, very few studies available on the costing issues.
Okay, if there's no other questions, I'll put us back to slide 19 and let you continue there, Olaf.
Okay, yes, here we can proceed. Okay, next one. This one is the next one. Okay, this diagram shows the percentages within gender in relationship to research areas. There is a highly significant association between research area and gender, and I'm very sorry that I have to confirm some common stereotypes now. Male researchers often deal with topics stereotypically associated with them, management and technology, whereas female researchers are more concerned with the social aspects of learning and teaching, so interaction and communication and learning communities, learner support service, and learner characteristics. The only field of educational management where women contributed more articles than men is learner support services and professional development and faculty support, often perceived as a softer discipline of management. I'm sorry that you can't read the text here. It was readable in my presentation, but not here in Illuminate. I'm sorry for that. Now, what about the research methods? The research methods were coded as very simply as quantitative, qualitative, triangulation for studies that used a mixed method design, and other. Meaning papers that were descriptive or theoretical in nature. So is there a trend towards more research that is qualitative? We can say yes, there is a modest, significant positive trend towards more qualitative research, but at a very low, at quite a low level. And however, there are no significant trends toward more or less quantitative studies or mixed method studies. What about methods and journals? This table shows the cross tabulation of methods and the five journals. And I think it's very interesting that it reveals that the American Journal of Distance Education prefers quantitative studies. 63.4% of all articles published between 2000 and 2008 in the American Journal of Distance Education followed a quantitative design. The journal which accepted by far the highest percentage of qualitative studies is the Australian Journal of Distance Education, the journal with most papers that applied a mixed method approach is the Journal of Distance Education, and iRotl and Open Learning are the journals with the highest number of descriptive or theoretical papers. 38% of articles are descriptive in nature, compared with 76% and 48% found by Burgi and Mishra. So maybe we can interpret this as a trend towards more empirical academic rigor in distance education research, but I don't know. What about collaboration among researchers in the field of distance education? following a bibliometric approach, we operationalized collaboration as through co-author relationship. And the average number of authors per article is 2.7, discounting the 302 articles submitted by single authors. And this average number of authors per article corresponds with that in other fields. So for example, Hunter and Lehay found an average number of 2.6 in leading sociology journals. And there is a significant trend towards more collaboration in the 695 papers. Furthermore, there is a significant association between collaboration and research method. Quantitative research is more likely to be collaborative. The mean number of authors of quantitative studies is 2.33. The mean number of authors of qualitative studies is only 1.87. And the error bar graph with a 5% confidence interval shows the significant difference between quantitative and qualitative studies in terms of the number of authors involved. The bars do not overlap. And this is again consistent with previous findings from sociology. So Hunter and Lehay found that papers using quantitative methods are four times more likely to be co-authored than articles that do not use empirical data. And they offered the explanation that quantitative analysis can be more easily divided among multiple authors. So that might be an explanation. Okay. It is also very interesting to look at who are the leading contributors in distance education research and where do they come from. 1,100 48 different authors contributed to the 695 articles in this study. And among them, 48 authors published at least 3 articles. So those are the leading contributors. So, and you see the vast majority of them comes from Canada. So Canada seems to be the center of international distance education research. So congratulations to Canada. Go Canada, go, yes. this is a list of the leading contributors, the 48 researchers. And I heard that this table caused a lot of joy at Athabasca University. The 7 Canadian researchers are marked in yellow, and the majority of them, 10 of them, come from Athabasca University. So congratulations to Athabasca University. The top author is Alan Young. He is a professor at the Florida State University, and his research is focused on diversity in online interaction patterns using a method called quantitative sequential analysis to explore different message response sequences and group interaction patterns in the online learning environment. And he was very successful in publishing lots of papers on this topic. For the analysis of the country-wise distribution of articles, the origin of the first author was taken into consideration. The authors come from 54 different countries, and it's very interesting to see that the vast majority, over 80% of all papers, comes from only 5 countries. From the USA, from Canada, from Great Britain, Australia, and China. And furthermore, the cross tabulation of countries and journals that you see here in this on this slide reveals that journals tend to publish more from their country of origin, especially the American Journal of Distance Education has a strong North American focus, or maybe we can say a North American bias. Over 80% of articles published in the American Journal of Distance Education are contributed by US American or Canadian authors. With a country of origin, I mean the institutional affiliation of the authors. However, a Canadian journal, iRodl, is the most international journal, with authors coming from 34 different countries, and only 19% of them are coming from Canada. And Germany is only on place 12, I think, or 15. We have to change that. Okay. So perhaps I can make a break here, because now we would start with a new topic. Are there any more questions at this point?
Hi, Olaf. Somebody had asked earlier, and I'm trying to scroll back to it now, about why those particular journals were chosen that you mentioned in the first part of the presentation.
Yeah. These 5 journals were chosen because they are the most they are the top journals in our field. I will show the data from my from our impact analysis that shows that they are the journals with the highest reputation. So that's the reason why they were chosen. They are the most prominent journals in the field.
Thank you, Olaf. I'm just going to continue to scroll through to find any other questions that popped up. But in the meantime, please feel free to grab the microphone if you have a question for Olaf, and just do that by clicking on the mic icon in the bottom left corner.
Okay, if there are no further questions, I would like to proceed. Is that okay?
Yeah, the only other question, there was somebody wanted to know about the correlation between the location of the journal itself and dominant countries of author origins. Was there a correlation, did you find?
Could you please repeat that? I didn't really understand the question.
Sorry, Wendy wanted to know if there was a correlation, if you found a correlation between the location of the journal. Actually, you did discuss that because you said Aradal had no, there was no correlation between where Aradal was published and the countries of origins of the authors, whereas in the U.S. there was a very strong correlation. Did you find the same for the rest of them? Was there a strict correlation, or was it just in the U.S.?
Yeah, this kind of bias, I would call it a bias. I found only for the American Journal of Distance Education. There are lots of Canadian and North American authors also in the Journal of Distance Education, but it was very strong only for the American Journal of Distance Education. Okay, so I go ahead now with the last part of my presentation. There is another question, one hand raised. Lynn?
Yes, I just wanted clarification again. In text, I asked the question what you meant by origin, and then Lynn has just mentioned the countries of origin of the authors. Could you just be very specific when you're talking about origin? Is it the origin of the institution where they work, as you said, or is it, as Lynn has just said, the countries of origin of the author, which is totally different?
Yes, it's the country of origin where the researcher works. So it's not necessarily the nationality of the researcher. Okay? Okay. So I proceed now. Open access journals. Open access journals are more and more an important outlet for research publications. And the directory of open access journals indexes more than 4,820 journals now, full text and quality controlled scholarly journals covering most academic disciplines. And open access publication may result in higher impact and exposure, but open access journals may also be perceived as having a lower value than older and more established closed subscription-based journals. So we were interested in how do experts evaluate the quality and prestige of open access journals in contrast to closed access journals? And do open access journals maybe even produce more citations over time? So in order to address these questions, we compared 6 open access journals and 6 closed access journals in the field of distance education, 1,416 full papers published between 2003 and 2008. And our ambitious hypothesis was that the impact of open access journals be one in terms of average citations per article and year is even significantly higher than the impact of closed journals, B2. And this study I did together with Terry Anderson and Nazime Tunkai. I think you all know Terry Anderson. Nazime is a PhD student from Cyprus, and this paper will be published in the next issue of the Journal of Distance Education, if you are interested. So how did we measure impact? The first thing was a citation analysis with the tool Publish or Perish, which is based on Google Scholar data. The widely accepted impact factor based on citation is the so-called Hirsch index, the Hirsch H index. If you have published 10 papers that are at least cited 10 times, then you have a Hirsch index of 10. Yeah? And furthermore, we asked all editors and editorial board members of the 12 journals about the perceived quality of the journal in a journal prestige survey using a rating scale according to Nelson Bass and Katzko. So why did we use Google Scholar data instead of common citation databases by major commercial publishers? So I think you all know The Web of Science by Thomson Publishing. The problem here is that it covers mainly English language journals from North America and Europe. That wouldn't be a problem because all 12 journals are in English. But it is limited to only 8,700 journals. But according to Ulrich's periodicals directory, there are now approximately 25,000 active refereed journals in the world. But more importantly, it does not, it provides different coverage between research fields, and none of the 12 distance education journals under investigation were listed in the Web of Science in 2009. Yes, correct. It was just decided that that the Australian Journal of Distance Education will be indexed now. More or less the same applies for the Scopus database, which provides access to over 15,000 titles, but among them only iRodl and the International Journal of Distance Education Technologies. So, but fortunately, we were able to gather data on citations on most of the 12 journals using Google Scholar. And Google Scholar automatically extracts bibliometric information and cited references from online full text documents. So you get a much better coverage. And we found about 80% of all articles in Google Scholar. But there's one disadvantage. The data you get is quite dirty, since Google Scholar finds all kinds of documents on the web. So you have to do a lot of time-consuming data management. But at the end, you arrive at a good coverage and good results. So this is an overview of our sample. The 12 journals, the 6 closed journals were the American Journal of Distance Education, the Australian Journal of Distance Education, Open Learning, the Quarterly Review of Distance Education, the International Journal of Distance Education Technologies, and the Indian Journal of Open Learning, which is now an open access journal, but until 2008 it was closed access. And the open access journals are the Online Journal of Distance Learning Administration, iRodl, the Journal of Distance Education, the Turkish Online Journal of Distance Education, the Asian Journal of Distance Education, and the European Journal of Open and Distance Learning. So there you see there are 1,416 articles during this time period of 6 years. And Google Scholar did find 1,123 articles, so this is a coverage of about 80%. But due to the low coverage of the European Journal of Open and Distance Learning in Google Scholar, just 33%, you see that at the bottom of this list, we decided to exclude this journal from the citation analysis, since this would not lead to valid results. This is just a screenshot to show you this interesting software tool, Publish or Perish. It was developed by an Australian researcher. You can download it from this website, housing.com. And with this tool, you can do a journal impact analysis, also an author impact analysis, so you can Google yourself and see how often you were cited. You can play around with it. It's very interesting. You see here, you can do a query, a search, for example, for the American Journal of Distance Education, pick some, and then you get the list of results here, and a number of indicators and measures, bibliometric measures, among them the Hirsch Index, and most importantly, the list of papers. And in the first column, you see the number of sites. Very interesting tool. But let's start with the perception data. How did the editors rate the quality of the 12 journals? And you see that we obviously have a top group of 5 journals. And those are the 5 journals that were in the literature review already, with iRodl, Distance Education, the American Journal of Distance Education, the Journal of Distance Education and Open Learning, which is the top group here. And then we have a field in the middle, maybe, with UROdl, the Journal of Distance Education Technology, the Quarterly Review of Distance Education, and maybe the Online Journal of Distance Learning Administration. And then we have a group with lower values, and among them are the Turkish Journal, the Asian Journal, and the Indian Journal. We don't have to go into much detail here, but just what I wanted to show is that we tested if editors rate their own journal significantly higher than non-editors. And we must acknowledge a bias of editorial board members who are, of course, more aware of their own journal, and there is, in fact, a greater propensity of perceiving more quality in their own journal. So, for example, going back one slide, so for example, you see that iRodl is the top rated journal, but a very high number of editorial board members participated in our survey. So given the described bias, I suppose that we have a top group of 5 journals that are more or less equal. But I will come back to this when I talk about a cluster analysis of the journals. The development of the impact over time, of a journal can be described in terms of sites per paper, which decline in the 6-year period. So a paper needs some time to generate citations, and then you get these declining slopes over time. And we can interpret the logarithmic regression coefficients, the B values, as a measure for the slope of the curve to describe the development of impact based on sites per paper. So the steeper the curve declines, the more impact a journal loses from 2003 to 2008. And then you get these declining curves for each journal. And now in comparing the slopes, B1 and B2 for of the two regression coefficients, papers in open access journals are in fact cited earlier, and closed access journals decrease faster. But the gentleman you see here is Ronald Fisher, contemplating about the consequences of setting P to 5%. And in our case, it regrettably means that we have to accept the null hypothesis. We can say there is a trend towards earlier citations in open access journals, but there's a special vet test by Paternoster that reveals that the two slopes are not statistically significant different from each other on the 5% confidence level. And finally, I carried out a cluster analysis and arrived at the following five groups of journals in terms of their perceived value and citations. And so you see there's a top group, the blue line, with the American Journal of Distance Education, iRoadle, and Open Learning, with very high prestige scores and very high citations. And it is very interesting that the Journal of Distance Education, the Canadian Journal of Distance Education, is not part of the top group here anymore. The Journal of Distance Education has very high prestige scores, but much lower much lower Hirsch score. And on the other hand, there is the Online Journal of Distance Learning Administration with the highest citation score, but much lower perception scores. And then we have the middle group with the International Journal of Distance Education Technologies and the Quarterly Review of Distance Education. And then again, the group at the bottom with the lowest values of prestige and citations. And finally, we can see, having in mind which journals are open access and closed access, that open access journals are present in the top group, as well as in the bottom group, as well as in the middle. So yeah, I'm a supporter of open access publications, and yeah, I hope that the results show that publishing in open access journals does not negatively impact the number of citations and nor the perceptions of values of value by experts in the field. Okay, I would like to finish my presentation with some conclusions, or very brief conclusions or implications for future research. As I said, there is a strong imbalance of the three major lines of research. Current research is clearly dominated by studies that focus interaction and communication, instruction design, and learner characteristics on the micro level. But major gaps were found on the macro and on the meso level. So issues like innovation and change management, the development of mainstream e-learning, puts a need on institutions for innovation and change. So all aspects related to educational management are in quality assurance, change management, and so on, should receive much more attention, especially in campus-based universities. And furthermore, I often mention the issue of globalization and cross-cultural aspects. Many institutions are using information and communication technologies for moving into the global education market, to reach new target groups using distance education and e-learning to export their knowledge So all aspects related to the globalization of education, cross-cultural aspects of international cooperation, and intercultural communication on the micro level should receive more attention. I just saw that in the current issue of iRodl, there's a very interesting paper by Patrick Parrish and Jennifer Linda van Beerschot about the challenges of multicultural instruction. And I think we need more research of this kind. Okay. And now I would like to finish my presentation. Thank you very much for your attention. And I hope that my exploration of the field of distance education research was interesting for you. And yeah, maybe you have some more questions. I'm looking forward to receiving more questions. Thank you very much.
If you have a question for Olaf or a comment, please feel free to grab the microphone at this point and pose those. Hi, Erwin. I'm so sorry, but I didn't hear anything there. I don't know if anybody else did either. Perhaps you could write your question or your comment in the text box. And in the meantime, I just want to take a moment to thank Olaf for sharing his very comprehensive research with us and providing us with a really detailed picture of what's happening and what's not happening in distance education research. So thank you so much, Olaf, for taking the time and out of your evening to come join us, because I know it is late in Germany right now. And I also want to remind everybody before they have to leave that our last CIDR session for this academic year will be taking, or sorry, our first CIDR session for the new academic year will be taking place on Wednesday, September 8th. And that will feature Kelly Edmonds. I believe she was here today. So hey, that's me. That's right, it is you, Kelly. And we're looking forward to your presentation in September on learning issues for online graduate students. And she'll be discussing a recent doctoral study that she completed that explored leadership implications for delivering online learning at a higher education institution. So we're looking forward to that in September, Kelly. And thank you to everybody for joining us here today on our last CIDR session of this academic year, and we're hoping that you have a wonderful summer off. And I'll open the floor again for questions or comments.
I'd just like to, thank Olaf. It's a great presentation, lots of data, and I'm glad there was a question about the recording. It will be available on the CIDR site. But I would mostly like to thank Lynn for a great year as the CIDR host. She's making that what used to be a kind of an onerous task for me is now real easy. I can just drop in here and Lynn does all the work, and I really appreciate her efforts. And on behalf of all the CIDRites around the world, I'd like to thank you, Lynn, for all your good work, and we look forward to another year.
Okay, I also would like to say thank you very much, and thank you for inviting me to this CIDR session. It was a pleasure to present here. Bye-bye.
Is it possible to answer Joanne Hammond's question in the text before, please?
Oh, wait. Where is it? Could you repeat the question, please?
Hi, Olaf. It's about what research methodology do you see most relevant to our need in distance education, and what could deserve further support in the future, and why? Just so that we had a little bit more wrap-up comment from you on that, it would be really helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a difficult question. It depends always on the topic. But generally, I would say I am a keen supporter of methodological triangulation. So it's always good, maybe to explore a research topic with qualitative methods, but then try to sort of cross-validate the results with quantitative methods. I think this is a very good way of doing research, in my opinion. So I would advocate for more triangulated studies in distance education, using both quantitative and qualitative methods to mutually validate the results.
Thanks a lot. That's really helpful. Bye-bye now.
You're welcome, and bye-bye. Have a nice day. It's evening in Germany now, 8 p.m., so I go home now. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody. And just to let you know, as soon as the room has emptied, I'll be able to make the recording for this session, or post the recording for this session. So goodbye, everyone, and thank you for joining us today.